In the last couple of months, Fruit Bowl has been censored by both TikTok and Apple's podcast app on three separate occasions. I was going to go into detail about each example, but it just took up too much time, so instead I wrote about it in a public post on my Patreon page, so you can go there and read more details if you like. Needless to say, this has been frustrating and discouraging, which is depressing because it feels like that's what they want. They just want me to give up. You'd think that after working on this project for 6 years, I would be used to this. I mean, Fruit Bowl is about queer sex. What did I think would happen? But it really does feel like we're headed towards labeling any kind of honest conversation about queer sex as out of bounds. I think these giant tech companies would prefer that I just give up, or at least play it safe and only share sanitized stories that straight families could listen to in Sunday school. But I have no intention of doing that. As I've said before, I think sharing these stories is important and necessary. No one else is going to do it for us. In fact, they will often try to silence us. And it goes without saying that if Donald fucking Trump gets elected this fall, it's going to get much, much worse. So I'm preparing to fight even harder for our stories to be heard. I want to take this opportunity to thank some of my recent Patreon supporters who have decided to help me fight the good fight. Thank you to an anonymous Canadian donor, Alan T., Ken V., Nicholas M., Scotty S., Ryan P., Rodrigo A., Brian G., Bill P., Oso S., Adam C., David T., and Owen. If you'd like to learn more about how to join Team Fruit Bowl, check out fruitbowlpodcast.com/donate. Also, I wanted to give a quick heads up for listeners who are here in Seattle. Fruit Bowl is co-presenting a very cool Pride film series this June at the Northwest Film Forum titled Time Disoriented: Radical Queer Pasts, Presents, and Futures. Cole Wilder, the forum's resident queer film programmer extraordinaire, has curated three unique and rarely seen films that present a variety of radical perspectives on creating queer identity in film across time, while rejecting old, oppressive ways of being. First up, screening June 5th through 9th, is Arthur J. Bresson Jr.'s Passing Strangers. Filmed in San Francisco in 1974 at the beginning of the gay liberation movement, it tells the story of a young gay man learning the ways of the world from an older man he meets through the classifieds. It's like Call Me By Your Name, but if it was hardcore porn. Next up is a brand new movie I know a lot of people are excited to see, including me. Fresh from its screenings at Sundance and South by Southwest is Jane Schoenbrunn's I Saw the TV Glow, a neon-soaked horror film set in the 90s about a teenager whose reality begins to crack after discovering a mysterious late-night TV show. Screening from June 12th to the 16th. And rounding out the series is Lizzie Borden's Born in Flames, a lesbian feminist classic from 1983 that screens June 22nd and 23rd. It follows a diverse set of roving girl gangs who organize a feminist uprising in a near-future New York City with righteous fury and impeccable style. Three extremely unique queer films that are a rare treat to see with a queer audience. Don't miss this series. Tickets can be purchased at nwfilmforum.org. Finally, thanks to Bailey Becker for editing the music and the final mix of this episode. All right, that's enough for me. Now, here's the show.
He just like slipped his hand onto my stomach under these like sleeping bags. And he was like, this is what we do when we're cold.
I did my best and apparently did good enough because then he came in my eye.
And the fake moaning became real humping.
I have to say, it was a really good first sexual relationship.
And then we had this kind of awkward fumbling sex and it was terrible.
I learned about eating pussy, learned about having my dick sucked, all from Mary.
Welcome to Fruit Bowl, an oral history of queer sex. I'm your host and the creator of Fruit Bowl, Dave Quantic. 5 years ago, I started interviewing queer people about their coming of age and the different ways we discover our sexual identities. Since then, I've presented 4 seasons of Fruit Bowl episodes that feature just one queer person's sexual history. This season, I'm picking through the Fruit Bowl archives, searching hundreds of hours of past conversations about queer sex, and creating episodes that explore common themes and subjects from a diverse cross-section of queer people. My goal is to destigmatize and promote conversation about queer sex, and, in the process, reveal the strength, resilience, and fierce individuality of queer people, and, at the same time, discover what unites us. First Times, Volume 3, High School Hookups, Part 2. Have you ever heard a story on Fruit Bowl and thought, oh my god, that same thing happened to me? Well, as I was assembling this second high school hookup episode, I realized that many of the stories have striking similarities. People who grew up thousands of miles apart, often in different decades, had similar experiences. So many of these similarities surfaced that I decided to create an entire episode featuring story pairs that are reflections of each other. Further proof that, even though queer adolescence is often full of deep insecurity and loneliness, there is likely someone out there who is going through the same thing that you are. In this first section, John and Adam describe their first hookup during an outdoor camping adventure. It almost makes me want to go camping. Almost.
My name is John. I am 44, and originally I am from Hayden Lake, Idaho. It was in high school where a buddy of mine was staying the night because we were going to go camping that weekend. Or like we were going to take off first thing in the morning to this campground we knew about. And we were discussing the possibilities of bisexuality. And I had known that he and another friend of ours had gotten drunk at the end of the school year. I was just at home. I couldn't go out. I'd gotten in trouble, so I wasn't allowed to go out on the last night of school. But they had gone out, and I'd heard them touch on some subjects of what might have happened when two young 16-year-olds are drunk by themselves. And I just remember, like, the worst FOMO ever. Like, why did I have to be grounded that night? So he and I had talked to, we got on the discussion of that. And then that evening, while we're in my bedroom, we got into the kind of like mutual masturbation. And we both came and we're both like, we're just not going to talk about this. But I knew I wanted it to happen again. And, we got out to the campground, and at some point in time, we were like, yeah, maybe we should try something else. We took a hike away from the campground, left another friend back at the campground. We're going to go for a hike. Bye. And we flipped a coin to give the first blowjob. I lost. I didn't care. I just got on my knees and took his pants down and started giving him a blowjob out in the middle of the woods. And because I remember, like, I'm going to do this. I'm doing this. And I'm like, okay, this is not so bad. This is, I kind of like this. So that was the first time really having sex. I think we did at one point, like during the summer, his parents had gone through a divorce. And at one point his dad had moved out and his mom was gone for some reason. So we snuck out of his house. We kind of were wandering around in the fields near his place and fooled around. And then we came back and we were going to try anal sex. Like, I didn't know what to think of it. I'm like, oh, well, let's give it a try. You know, I mean, people do it for a reason. And the one thing that did not occur to us was lube. So we're both trying. We're both open to the, we both took turns. We're like, this isn't going anywhere. And I'm like, you know, just push harder. And he's like, okay. And then the same way, it's like, just push harder. Like, and I do remember one of us said, like, how do gay guys do this? You know, the notion of lube wasn't even there. So that was sort of a failure there. After that, I got a girlfriend. And this girl I had known for years. I took her to homecoming, and then we started dating after that. And eventually we had sex, and I thought, okay, cool, I'm cured. And whatever that was, it's, you know, it's in the past. So was not in the past. But you know, for the first time, it was novel and it was fun and it was socially appropriate, so to speak. You know, when you're talking underage sex, and contrary to what a lot of gay men say, it was better than some of the gay sex I've had. I mean, there's a fairly mechanical process to it, and you know, you get off. And I've had some disappointments with men. So, you know, all in all, it wasn't the worst thing ever. But it did not stop me from wanting to be with men. And then she and I went for like 3 years. We lived together, didn't live together. We split up. And then a year or so later, I met my first boyfriend. And before it was actually boyfriend, it was like a first date, like the day-long date. And ended up at his place and did what I knew. Like I knew oral. I could do oral, you know, that was definitely, but then it was like he's want to have anal sex, and he was totally for bottoming, and I'm like, okay, that's good, because I have no experience doing that. And he'd been out-ish, he'd had a boyfriend once before, he'd had some experience. So that was the first time where I got to fuck a guy. We were together not quite a year, and a couple of times I'm like, do you want to do that to me? Like, I had my hesitation, and he goes, yeah, you probably, it'd probably just hurt you a lot, so I'm fine with this. So it was easily a couple of years before I actually tried bottoming for somebody. It was some guy who had come up from Boise to Spokane, and he was not particularly well endowed, which was fine for that experiment. And so I was still 23 when I did that. So I would say those are probably the big ones. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was pretty patient. Yeah. He knew that I'd picked up a toy on a trip. And so I'd had some like practice with that. Mm-hmm. And he was smaller than the toy. So he was pretty patient about it, because he knew that this was the first time where, like, I was not going to be 100% in control of the situation. And all in all, it wasn't a terrible experience, but it wasn't what I was expecting. Like, based on what I had seen other people experience, I'm like, wait a minute, this is supposed to be better. That I'm supposed to, like, stars and explosions and, like, this is just mostly okay.
I'm Adam. I am 37. I graduated high school in 2000. I grew up in Barrie, Vermont. I was a sophomore in high school. A couple people from my outing club and I went to this military academy where they were doing this outdoor survival weekend in the winter. So it was us and like cadets, like college cadets. And there was a teacher who I was really enamored with. And this might be a father figure, who knows, figure thing. But I remember I was like really enamored, and we had a very, very close relationship, and he was leading it, this outing club trip with us. And so a lot of my motivation for being there was to prove to him that I could hang and that I could, was so into this thing. Oh, I'm so into camping. I remember my mom was terrified because she thought I was going to freeze my fingers, because by then I was really playing piano a lot. But I was really into like proving myself to this teacher who I had the crush on. But on that trip, there was this guy who was really fascinated by the fact that I had an older sister in Playboy. And he wanted to be next to me. And at a certain point, everyone was talking. All these cadets were talking. I was really fascinated by their lives. And he just like slipped his hand onto my stomach under these like sleeping bags. And he was like, this is what we do when we're cold. You know, this is a cold thing. And I was like, okay. By then, I was really paranoid about being outed just in general. By then, I'd really become used to being called a faggot and being chased and all of that. So I'd become very defensive about my boundaries. And then he just started to work his way down. Of course, I was like totally aroused, and I was bracing for him to discover that and freak out. And he just like totally went for it. And over the night, everyone had to like watch the fire at a certain point and wake up the person next to them and then watch the fire in the tent, because it was so cold, we all shared a tent. And then he said, I'm going to wake you up when it's our turn to watch the fire. And so then when he woke me up, everyone else was asleep. And that was what I consider my first time. And we had what my friend calls little sex, which was we blew each other, we made out. And all of this was like a first time for me. And cuddled, and that closeness was just something I never experienced with another man, but another person. But we did, and we definitely finished, and we had the whole thing. And I just was like, I remember the next day just being like, holy shit, like, we kissed. Like, that was something I hadn't really done, like an actual kiss with someone. And I was like, that was amazing. And we blew each other. Like, that was amazing.
And this was all in the tent with other people?
Yeah, they were asleep.
Whoa.
I know. I was more afraid when they were awake and he slipped his hand under my pants. Like, that was scarier because I didn't know that it was on. I knew that everyone was asleep. We were quiet and discreet about things. I just remembered feeling, again, sort of like my first time having my first orgasm. I felt really proud. Like, I did this thing. Weirdly, not ashamed. Like, I did it with a guy. But it was more like, all right, that happened and that was good. With this stranger, this cadet, we would meet every so often. We'd like mess around in my truck. I remember we messed around in the dugout of a baseball field. He stayed over at my house once, slept in my bed. Again, like all this stuff later, I was like to my family, like, come on. And like, but that one person was actually rather still like semi-anonymous, what I would think of as now, like this disconnected, safe person in another town who I could actually like practice on, who I could like have this thing with.
These next two interviewees, Dan and Salvador, both found a sexy connection when they fell for guys they met outside their normal high school community, and both of them experienced an AIDS panic after the hookup.
My name's Dan. I'm 46 years old, and I graduated from high school in 1993. I was born in Seattle and then grew up north of Seattle in a little housing development of cul-de-sacs called Misty Meadows. My friend and I used to come down on weekends from Snohomish County up in Everett area where we lived. I would have been 17 and hang out at friends' flop apartments with a bunch of punk kids and goth kids and club kids, and often spend the whole day just kind of hanging out, and then usually we would all end up going to an underage nightclub to go dancing at night. In Seattle, yeah, for a while we would go to the Underground, which was like a goth club, but I think by this point we had switched to going to a club called The Oz, which later became Deviate. It's like, it was right underneath the Space Needle, basically, like across the street. You're supposed to be over 18, but we had fake ID. All the gays sort of danced on one side and like everyone else danced on the other side. So there was kind of this community there. So it was definitely on one of the days at that house leading up to going out probably that night. And this guy I hadn't seen before showed up and I was like super infatuated immediately. He was kind of cocky, probably kind of a dick. That was what I was into. And at one point he's like, oh, I need to go run to my apartment and grab something and come back. And he may have like asked me if I wanted to come with him. And everyone in the room knew exactly what was happening, probably except to me. So we go to his house, got whatever it was. And then I remember like he was going to play the song for me that he wanted me to hear. So like we sat down on his bed and he put on this, maybe a CD, probably a CD. And it was like the B-side of Erasure's Blue Savannah, which was this song called No GDM, which had the word queer in it. And like, anyway, so he starts playing that. And then like, I think we start kissing. He like makes his moves. He was 21, so a little bit older, classic pattern with me. And then what I remember is me sucking his dick. I don't remember if I even pulled my dick out. I don't remember me getting off at all, but I remember like it was exciting, but also like I was completely unfamiliar other than what I'd seen in movies. And like, so I did my best, and apparently I did good enough because then he came in my eye. So, which immediately turned bright red. And then we, you know, clean up as best we can, go back to the apartment where everybody else is. And like, it's very clear what had happened, that like all of a sudden I've got like one bloodshot red eye. Because like HIV was such a huge threat, like the idea that like this substance that we were taught to believe was like, you know, could kill us, his semen went in my eye, which is like an unprotected capillary filled space. Like that was definitely anxiety producing. And I know that day that was in my head, that like, okay, maybe I got AIDS because I let someone come in my eye. Mm-hmm. I was not super embarrassed about it. I think I was just like more excited that happened. And then he and I started dating for a little while. And he even came home for Easter dinner one time, which was very awkward. But he was also the person that like fucked me for the first time. And that was at my friend Zach's house. I had arranged with my parents to like be able to sleep over at Zach's. And the boyfriend was there as well as another friend. And then, you know, it's time to go to bed. And we go into one bedroom together. And he puts on Concrete Blonde, the song Joey, on repeat. So that song just keeps going over and over and over as we sort of get down to business. And he fucks me for the first time. And I don't remember it very well. What I mostly remember is what my friend said, because he was sleeping in his mom's bed on the other side of the wall. And he claims I sounded like a werewolf and that I left huge scratches in the wall. And I don't remember any of that. But like, you know, getting anally penetrated for the first time, I could see how maybe those things were true. But I guess I enjoyed it enough to like repeat, because like we continued dating and he continued fucking me. And I think he was also the first person that fucked me with using shampoo as lube, because it was all that was there in the shower, because he lived with two roommates in like a studio apartment and we would like fuck in the shower. And yeah, that was not good. Do not recommend that, kids. I mean, he should have known better, right? You know, this was pre-prep, age of AIDS. Like, we were still very anxious. This would have been like, yeah, 92. Definitely using condoms, but then using completely inappropriate lubricant. I think he had a pattern of doing this. I think everyone knew, because he had already dated one of my other friends and broken up, and then after he and I dated and broke up, he then dated another friend. Like, he was sort of working his way through people. But, like, also, in a way, mentoring us all in gay sex.
My name is Salvador, and I'm 39 years old. I graduated high school in 1998. I grew up in Southern California, in a little, not so little city called Whittier. My summer, junior year going into senior year, I was part of a all-city band in the city of Santa Fe Springs. And we would be mixed in with students from like all these schools from Santa Fe Springs, but then also there'd be a lot of students from our Catholic school. We ended up becoming friends with like, you know, kids, like bando kids from other schools. And one person that I gravitated towards immediately was this guy named Hector, who was a clarinet player. He was like this stocky but firm Latino guy, and he was a senior. Very flamboyant. You know, girls love him to be around because he's very friendly and he's very like them, but non-threatening because he's gay and he's not gonna try to get into their pants. I didn't like his personality, but damn, like he had a fucking amazing ass, a nice chest. Very thick, muscular legs. There was this girl named Julie. So Julie would always host these parties where all the fucking band kids would come. And I remember, I think like my twin brother couldn't go to the party, but I really wanted to go. And I wanted to go, especially when I found out that Hector was going to be able to give me a ride there. And like the minute I get in his car, it's just me and him. There was supposed to be other people there. I don't know if he planned it or not, but it was just me and him driving to Julie's house. And it was maybe like a 10-15 minute ride to her house. I don't know what it was. I think we both kind of like clocked each other as being queer. But I remember we started getting into this conversation about how like we started daring each other on the ride over there, like to do gay stuff to prove that we weren't gay. And I think like for me, like after like already experiencing like, you know, the trials and tribulations of like bathroom cruising, I was like, I know where this is going. Like we just started daring each other. And I remember at a certain point, it was like, I dare you to rub your hand on my thigh, you know? And I was just like, why? It's like, no, just to do it. I'm like, all right. So, you know, did that. By the time we actually got to Julie's house, like, you know, there was like some tension building up. I started getting a boner immediately because I remember I'd already like, you know, caressed his inner thigh. And like, you know, like I'm really into sensorial touch play as an adult now. And I think I started getting my first experiences with it during that dare session with him. We were parked outside for like 30 minutes. We went inside for the party. There was a lot of sexual tension between me and him. We started like stealing a bunch of glances and touches at the party together. We were both like testing each other to see how far we would go. After the party, we ended up back in his car. We got to a point where I just went for it. I don't know how, like, but I ended up pulling his dick out. I'm like, I bet I can rub your dick and you'll get hard. And he's just like, I bet that I won't get hard. I'm like, okay, let's try. I started playing with his balls and I was just super happy to actually like play with somebody's dick. And I was just like, I'm going to touch your balls. I'm going to touch your dick. And I don't care if I get AIDS and die. But he had foreskin as well. So I was just like pulling back on it. And I was just like, and then like, you know, it's like, I just started jerking him off. And that's probably the first time I realized, oh, I think I have a big dick. But I was like jerking him off. He had a like fat dick, but it wasn't too long. And like, I knew what this was. I was just like, oh my God, I'm jerking him off. Like, I know this because I do this to myself all the time. And I was just like, so taken aback with the way like he was like, oh, like that. And I was like, holy shit. It's just like when I do it. And then like, this idea of having control of either making him come or just leaving him blue balled, it was just fucking hot. And I remember at that point he was like, I bet if you put your mouth over it, you're not gonna like it. I'm like, I don't think so. Like, it was just dumb. Like, this whole, like, I bet if you did this, like, you know, basically telling me what he wanted me to do, and I'd be like, nah. I think that's when I also, like, found that I like doing, like, power play stuff. By the time his dick was out, I was the one doing the stuff to him. I didn't want him to touch my dick because I thought that if he touched my dick, he got his hands on it, I would get AIDS. I ended up making him come, and it was amazing. Like, I was like, oh my God, this is, holy shit, this is all. But I couldn't be like, oh my God, that's so hot, because I was like still in the mindset of I can't make him think that I'm gay, even after like jerking him off. But I remember the thing that scared me was not if somebody in the housing complex saw us, but I got a bit of his cum on my hand and I freaked out. And I was like, oh my God. And I think I must have said, I'm like, I'm gonna get AIDS. So stupid. Like, I was like, cause I felt like if I was just, you know, it started rationalizing, so long as I don't get his cum on me, I'm not gonna get AIDS and I'm not gonna die. Yeah. I remember after that, he would push for us to hang out and I'd be like, no, I'm good. I just wanted to have like a sexual encounter with him. And that was it. Like, for me, it was about experimenting. It's like, that's when I started, like, really getting into the idea of sexual conquests.
Anders and Syra, who were both assigned female at birth, discovered that hanging out with friends can sometimes lead to playful sexual experimentation.
My name is Anders. I'm 33 years old, and I graduated from high school in 2004. I was assigned female at birth, and I started transitioning a number of years ago. I grew up in a neighborhood that's kind of surrounded by Dallas, Texas, and it was very conservative. It was a Republican stronghold, and probably still is. When I was in high school, I was part of a Rocky Horror Picture Show group, Shadowcast, and there was one girl on the cast that I had the biggest crush on. And she was absolutely amazing. And after one of her performances, we were at IHOP, because that's what you do. And this one guy on our cast was an ordained minister. And so I was like joking, being like, we should get married. And she's like, okay, but these other two people on the cast, these other two women need to get married to us too. And I'm like, okay. And then so we had like this mock like wedding thing in the IHOP, I think parking lot. I don't really remember. And then I was jokingly like, ha ha ha, we should have a honeymoon. And they're like, yeah, yeah, we should. And I'm like, really? We reserved a hotel room. We had tried to go to a hotel that had like the heart-shaped hot tub thing, but that one was full or too expensive or something. And so it was just a regular hotel room and there was a pool. And we had vanilla Coke and vanilla rum and like had mixed them together. It was awful, but you know, we were in high school. We were all down in the pool swimming and two of them were like, hold on, stay here. And once they told us we could go inside, we did. And they had put rose petals from the elevator to the door. And then when we walked inside, there were rose petals from the door to the bed. And there were like flowers all over the bed. And then like, we were all in like bikinis. And so then it turned into, it was like something out of a porn movie. It was incredible. And it was like our last big hurrah before we all went off to college. And what was funny is I was down in town later, like a year later for like the Christmas holiday or something. And we were all going to the movies and my friend's mom was there and she like pulled me inside and she was like, I know what you did with my daughter. And I was just like, okay, thanks. But yeah, it was a good night.
I'm Syra. I'm 30 years old and I graduated high school in 2009. I grew up in Wilmington, Delaware. I didn't realize I was having sex the first time I had sex. Well, this was pre-high school. I was 12 or 13. And it was with two female friends at the time. One of them was on the phone with some boy she liked and made some joke about us having a threesome. And for some reason, I can't remember to this day why or how, that led to me and the other girl like fake moaning and like rolling around on the floor. And the fake moaning became real humping and real kissing. And we definitely both got off, like, as the web would call it now, tribbing, like thigh humping. And then my third friend who had been on the phone, got off the phone and like clearly felt like left out. And so we kind of kept going. So that was my first sexual experience, was doing that with these people, being like, these are my friends. We had a fun time. And then being like, we will never speak of this again. I started having these experiences with other feminine people, whether they identified as male or female, where we would like have these sexual exploratory moments and then they would be full of like shame and denial. And I would be like, that was a great time. Wait, what? What?
As Gloria Estefan once said, bad, 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 bad boys can make you feel so good. Kinney and Andrew both discovered that while bad boys can be fun to fool around with, they can also break your heart, sometimes in just one 24-hour period.
My name is Kinney, and I'm 30 years old. I grew up all over the place. I've lived about more than 10 states, but I grew up most of my life in Kansas. There is several years in which I was moving around a lot, so I wasn't with my parents, and I was staying with my grandparents, so a lot of instability didn't give me the confidence or courage to like explore the identity that was developing. So the first guy that I had that kind of more intimate sexual experience with was someone who I went to high school with, and I was a freshman, and he was an upperclassman, junior or senior. But I'm pretty sure he got expelled. So, because I never remember seeing him at school, but everybody was talking about him. And he was a very like Blink-182 alternative guy and like had gauges before gauges were a thing in Kansas. And it was kind of out of the blue. Like I'd only seen him probably once before. And he was a friend of a friend. We were at the bowling alley, which was the only place to be in that city. He gave me his number that night at the bowling alley. So I was able to text him, and yeah, I think I only had 25 texts a month, and I spent them all on him way back when. And I went over to his house, and he lived in the basement of this house, and I assumed his parents were upstairs, but he had his own car, and he had his own entrance, and he just had so much like personality and swagger about him. we would drive around in his car around town and listen to music. And that was just like so cool because he knew all this music that I didn't know. He was just so much cooler than me. But then he took me back to his place.
It was so dark. He had like light bulbs that had been painted. So they weren't even like store-bought light bulbs. He had painted them with like black light stuff. So it was like really setting the mood. And there was a lot of like wall coverings of psychedelic tapestries. And I was like, oh, sweet. Like, I can be bisexual too. Like, this is what it's going to be like. And he put on a lot of music. He lit a lot of incense. And we like rolled around in his bed. And like we give each other blowjobs and like jerked each other off and kissed a lot of kissing. Something I pride myself on now is that I'm a good kisser. I was a horrible kisser back then. Like I just never saw anybody kissing apart from movies. So I feel like half the time we spent together, it was me learning how to navigate someone else's mouth with my tongue and my lips. And then he had a pretty good sized dick. So like I just learning how to not have teeth and to not choke, gag and all of the above. Really, I was just trying to play out everything I had read in all my my smut articles to real life. But that was the first time that was consensual and we were both into it and we finished and he's like, okay, well, I'll drive you home. He never talked to me again. So it was like the grandest of awakenings, if anything. Cue every like emotional response I could have. Like I ended up getting in my car like a week later. I haven't heard from him. I'm like, let's go do a wellness check. We need to drive by his place. So we drive across town and there's his car in the driveway. And I'm able to think to myself as a 15-year-old thinking, this is stupid. Like, I got a lot of life. There's going to be a lot more men and women in my life. Like, I don't need to obsess over this. But that's when I really started to like dive into music, and music started to like heal my soul. And like, I have my first breakup album. I consider that. So it ended up being a great thing. That breakup album in particular was The Killers, which formed my love for them. But it's just a lot of the songs work together for how I was feeling within that moment. I think actually when he drove me home that night, The Killers was playing and I glommed onto it. Not because of him, but I think I like took the ownership and I was like, no, I actually really fucking like this song and it's not gonna be marred by my bad experience with you. But The Killers was really what I dove into for that. But the rest of it, like I was like death metal this and like heavy metal this, and I was really falling into some 80s rock and 70s rock and just like getting into it, getting into the emotion.
My name is Andrew, I'm 31, and I graduated high school in 2007. I grew up 45 minutes outside of Philadelphia in a town called Westchester, Pennsylvania. I went to a summer arts theater camp when I'm like 12 or 13, and the boy that I had a crush on, he was like the cool goth kid. He listened to Nine Inch Nails and Marilyn Manson and did not give a fuck about what anybody thought of him and wore giant trip pants and shopped at Hot Topic. And I thought he was the coolest thing. And I was so in love with this boy. And I remember it was like, while everyone was at dinner, we went to the rock shed and it was raining and he pulled his dick out and I blew him. And then he blew me, and then we made out. And I just remember being like, this is what I'm meant to be doing. This is this person. This is, yes. We were dating, at least I thought we were. And as much as you can date when you're 13 and 14. And no, he took my anal virginity. He fucked me. And then over the course of the entire summer, he like completely broke my heart. I fell in love with him and was like, would write him like little love notes and cards and stuff. And I made him a ring. And then at the end of the summer, he threw it at me and he was like, I never want to see you again. It was very dramatic. We were both theater majors. And then we found out that we lived close by each other and continued hooking up. We actually went to a bathhouse together in Philly, which was fun. It's funny, he actually lives in Brooklyn and we're still sort of in touch to this day.
As difficult as queer adolescence can be, some of us, like Ade and Jalen, are lucky enough to find a close friend who's willing to explore sex kind of like a co-pilot on an adventure.
My name is Ade. I'm 41 years old. I graduated high school in 1997. I grew up in Denver, Colorado. My best friend in middle school going into high school lived across the street from me, and her name was Ayana. Ayana's cousin, his name was Quentin, and he's just this big, giant guy. He was a couple years older than us. He was like 16, 17. And he and I became friends, and so he would, like, when the parents were away, he would, like, put on porn. Ayana would always be like, she'd just be horrified. And he and I would sit there watching porn together, and then we would start masturbating together. And then it graduated from there to oral sex, and it never went really further than that. That was really my first real sexual relationship, and I have to say, it was a really good first sexual relationship. Like, I didn't feel ashamed, and I didn't feel like he felt ashamed, and it was kind of liberating in a way, and it put the idea of sex in a different perspective where it didn't feel like I should be ashamed of it or not do it because it's bad. I just felt like, you know, we have fun doing this, you know, it feels good and we're enjoying it, so whatever. There was a period of time where I left for a couple years and I lived with my dad, so we would have phone sex. And then we would get together when I visit my mother on the weekends. And it never seemed really taboo. Like, it's not like we talked about it in front of people, but... And it wasn't like we had in-depth adult conversations about sex or anything. We would just be like, oh yeah, let's try this sort of thing, you know, or... That was fun, or, you know, whatever. It was never really, like, a discussion about sex with us. That started when I was a freshman in high school. He graduated, and he moved away. That's right, he moved in with his dad. And he still would come pick me up, and we would go fool around at his dad's house. So that went on, actually, probably till I was a senior in high school. I did go out with a couple guys, but nothing ever became sexual. Now that I think back on it, it was kind of like a relationship, you know?
So my first name is Jalen. I'm 41, and my hometown is Jackson, Mississippi. I do remember one friend that we used to talk a lot and do some, you know, cautious exploration. He was a neighbor kid from around the corner. He was my best friend. And I think he was just curious, too, like me, about sex, the exact same age as I was. And we were really close. Yeah. He was on the couch, under the cushions of the couch, and I was on top, and I was humping him, as I had seen, of course, on HBO. So that's sort of like my first explorations. And they were all around this one guy, too. What's really strange is I'm trying to think of my first time, and I don't quite... It happened really early. There were levels of engagement with sex. I mean, there's blowjobs that happen first, and then dry humping, and then, of course, eventually anal sex and vaginal sex and et cetera later on. I think the first impactful had to be with another neighbor. I apparently was the little slut of the neighborhood. So, but it was another neighbor who wasn't always there, but only came in the summers. And I don't quite remember the first time, but I know that it was Kim that I did the most exploration with for every following summer when he came until I didn't see him again in high school. He was the first one that I attempted to give a blowjob. So I didn't really know what a blowjob was. Like, sucking dick wasn't really in my vocabulary at the time. And so what does it sound like? We knew it had to do with the penis and the mouth. And so somehow we thought it was blowing. So there was some oral involved, so I would get it wet, and then I thought the purpose was to actually get the cold feeling on his penis, so I'd get it wet with my mouth and then just start blowing on it, like, and he liked it, so I guess it did work. And he is the first one where we attempted anal sex, and it was too much, particularly for me. But eventually, over the course of summers, we figured out how to do it, and he'd come back with more knowledge that he was getting from somewhere in Texas. I don't know where, but he'd come back with more knowledge, and we'd do more exploration. The experience was very positive for me. The only negative was he was, of course, both of us were Christian, and we were in Black Christian society in the South, him in Texas, being me in Mississippi. And so we had to hide it, our sexual explorations, and felt really guilty about it. Particularly, it would eventually happen that we'd go through a series of explorations, and before he left, for the end of the summer, he would just stop talking to me because he got either shamed, embarrassed, or something happened. But then we'd repeat the cycle the next year.
Stephen and Donovan are two interviewees who have so much in common. I was able to prepare two different segments that show striking similarities. In this first section, both describe falling for someone related to their mom's boyfriend.
My name is Stephen. I am 50 years old, and I graduated high school in 1987. I grew up in Tucson, Arizona. My mom's boyfriend's younger brother, Mike, came to stay with us one summer after getting in trouble in San Diego. And he was 13 and big beefy jock boy, and I was hooked. I thought about him for years. So Mike came to stay with us, and I was this little, skinny, gay boy and a total nerd and a book reader, and I didn't hang out with kids because they were dumb. And here comes this big jock, muscly jock, and I didn't know what to think of him. He seemed like an alien to me. But then we all had to go camping, and he and I shared a tent. And it was when he sort of brought it around to us comparing our dick sizes, and he could do this thing where he could get his dick to flop from one side to the other. And I was like, whoa, that's impressive. Because, you know, I had an 11-year-old's penis, and it was not impressive at all. And he seemed like such a cool guy. I crushed out on him. I didn't even know what was happening, though. I'd never felt anything like this before, and I certainly couldn't talk about it because I didn't have any words for it. And I think I also knew it was not okay. I also think I was so gay that everyone could see it but me, sort of thing. So yeah, it progressed to him making me get on my knees while he jacked off in my face. And I was 11 years old and I didn't know what was going on, but all I knew was I liked it a lot. I will say that all that play with me on my knees and him jacking off, he would then make me run around naked in the backyard, and he would lock the door and close the curtains. And it took me years to figure out he was inside jacking off. Mm-hmm. He was not the only guy to hit on me. He was just the only guy I let myself fantasize about. Eventually, his step-parents didn't want us to hang out anymore, thinking that I was a bad influence on him, which is hilarious. And I didn't see him again until I was 17. And by that point, I knew I was gay. And he was 19, and he was even beefier. We ended up taking some acid together when I was 17. And I had basically a religious experience of just all of this energy moving through my entire body. Eastern mystics would call it kundalini. And it was like a full body orgasm that lasted for 10 minutes. And Mike was over in the corner going like, what is wrong with you? I'm like, dude, this is a good time. Anyways, I digress. It was kind of amazing. And I totally tried to get it on with him, and he was not having it.
I'm Donovan, and I'm 46. I grew up in San Diego. I was born and raised there. So I didn't have a ton of super close friends. A lot of growing up was just kind of me trying to figure it out on my own. The close friend that I did have had a cousin, and that cousin's father was dating my mom, at least for a short period of time they were dating. And so we were sort of forced to spend time together. And in the course of, you know, play dates and things like that, sleepovers and whatnot, one night we kind of hooked up and just kind of fumbling around, you know, this is what playing doctors like, I guess, we're touching here and we're doing this. And I remember getting my first blowjob and giving my first blowjob at 12. And it was always like, this wasn't supposed to happen. And then we wouldn't talk about it. And then we'd be forced to be in the same circles again. And it was just the two of us. And then it would happen again. So it happened about four or five times, I would say, just because there was a lot of dates and, you know, sleepovers and whatnot.
When you fooled around, was there any kind of talk or a discussion at all with him?
It was like a feeling. It was like a passion, the passion of the act. And then once the act was over, there was distance. It was, you know, there was guilt. There was, this wasn't right. This wasn't, we shouldn't have done this. Probably more from his end than mine. But then my mom stopped dating the guy and we stopped seeing each other. I can't ask him because he passed away. He died in an accident many years later. And there had been years of distance where, you know, we just had no contact. There was no reason for us to contact each other. But I can't ask him to this day. Who knows? Would he have been queer growing up? Maybe that was a phase for him. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But no, there was never really any talk about it because we were so young. The only talk we had was more like, this shouldn't happen. This shouldn't happen again. And then, of course, you know, a little bit of time would go by and it would happen again, you know. So there was desire there.
In this next section, Stephen and Donovan describe two early hookups who made them question whether or not being gay was even worth it.
So I had met this guy, Eric, at the food court in the Tucson Mall. He was introduced to me through my friend Beth. And I had been eating a chocolate-covered pretzel. And he asked if he could lick my fingers clean. And so right in the middle of this food court, this boy sucks every single finger clean of chocolate. And I was embarrassed, but also thought it was really hot. He said I should come over. So I came over to his house after school the next day. And his mom was there. And he was watching The Wizard of Oz, because it turns out that was his favorite movie. So I sat there as he proceeded to speak the dialogue to every single character in the film. This was not a turn on. It just made me think he was super weird. And he kept trying to give me these rum balls, these chocolate rum balls. And I looked at him with the authority of a 17-year-old and said, dude, you don't have to get me drunk to have sex with me. Like, I am into it, and can we skip the movie and get to it? So his mom went away, and we went to his bedroom, and I got to suck my first dick, and vice versa, and he wanted me to fuck him. So I think we used condoms, because AIDS was so prevalent. It had been around since I was 12 years old, and I was terrified of it. And I fucked him. It just went in so easily that I didn't even think that he'd have to get used to it. There, no one told me anything. And so he basically pushed me out of him and was like, I have to ease into this, whatever. So we figured it out. And I had such a good time having sex with him. I went home that day and he called me up the next day. And I remember saying to him, so we're going to be together forever now, right? Like, you're my boyfriend, right? And he laughed a little bit, and then he wouldn't talk to me again for months. And when he resurfaced on the scene, he'd actually had himself committed for a few months, maybe because he was gay, I don't know. When he got out, all he would do is make fun of my lisp, and I was so hurt by the whole thing that I didn't have sex again for 2 more years. I was like, fuck being gay. If this is what gay dudes are like, I'd just rather not do anything. Whew.
I had a pool growing up, so I'd have a few friends over, and when I was about 17, this one time, this particular guy came within the group to my house, and we're in the pool, we're all hanging out, blah, blah, blah. Everyone starts to trickle out and leave, and he was the last one there, and, you know, we're talking. It was fine, you know, it was fine when there was this whole group, but then suddenly we were alone. Went inside, you know, we're changing clothes. I think that's how it happened. And he kissed me, and I was like, well, we're alone, and okay. And I kind of went through with it, and we got naked, and, you know, he blew me, I blew him, and then he rimmed me, and I was like, whoa, you know, this is next level. I was used to oral sex because that had happened when I was, you know, very young. So, but then he rimmed me, and I almost immediately came. And then I flipped out, you know, not like to him. It was more just like, okay, well, that happened. And now I'm going to ask you to leave, and I'm going to go clean up, you know, all that. That one experience triggered a lot of my own internalized homophobia at the time, because he was so flamboyant and so out, and it wasn't expected that this was going to happen, that it made me really kind of shut down and back away from sex again for a couple of years. Because, you know, like I said, conservative town, you really worry about these sorts of things. I'm not proud of it. And then in school, we were in different circles. So it was very easy for me to just kind of steer the other way. So we kept major distance after that one time. Plus, I still liked girls. I still, you know, had a thing for girls. I had crushes on girls. And then he transferred to another school a couple months later. So it was kind of like, well, we don't see each other anyway.
Both Justin and Paul had hookups with older guys who, frankly, should have known better. Fortunately, neither Paul nor Justin look back at these experiences with any trauma, and instead see the experience as just one chapter in a larger narrative about queer coming of age. Strangely, both stories also have a curious connection to ballet.
I'm Justin, age 48. I grew up in Providence, Rhode Island. It's a university town, Brown and RISD. My first time was with this older man. He was 21. I was 17. We were classmates in this college class that I was taking as a high school student. It was the final day of class, and we were all going out and partying. One of my other classmates told me, like, hey, Tim is interested in you. And this other woman in class, or Sharon, was also interested in me. And I kind of, you know, just made a beeline for Tim, basically. And he invited me to spend the night with him, stay over, a sleepover. But I knew that he was interested in me. So there was a part of me that was like really excited and really nervous. So I spent the night and, you know, slept in the same bed. And then we had this kind of awkward fumbling sex, and it was terrible. I mean, of course, I mean, I don't no idea what I was doing. But
he didn't know what he's doing?
Yeah, probably not much. Yeah. He didn't know much of what he was doing either. Yeah, it was just awkward, kind of bad sex. And then, you know, I was there for the summer, and then I went back to Rhode Island and went back to high school. And I knew that I would never have to see him again after that night, which made everything a lot easier because I could just have this experimentation. And then with no ramifications and no consequences, I could go back home and figure out what it meant and on my own time. And And he apparently was hurt by that, which I didn't even kind of realize until later when I talked to this mutual friend from the class. And she said, oh, yeah, Tim was quite hurt by the fact that you got what you wanted and then just vanished. But I was 17 and a virgin, and he was 21 and an actualized gay man, right? So, you know, what did he expect exactly? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I still needed to process what it meant. So I went back to high school for my senior year. And didn't know how to deal with it, you know, even though it wasn't good sex. I was like, all right, what does this mean? Either I'm straight and this is just a kind of phase, or I'm bi and you know, sex with women will feel the same or better, or I'm gay. So I still wasn't sure. And then about halfway through my senior year, I told my best group of friends that I had sex with a man. And they were very supportive. It was a good group of friends. One of them ended up being gay as well. And then I went to college at State University of New York at Purchase, you know, by the way, is like the first campus in the country to have a GLBT group, literally. So it was extremely progressive. There were no sports at all. The only sports club was the Ultimate Frisbee team. They were the jocks. The Ultimate Frisbee players were the jocks. And it was a co-ed group, you know. Precisely where I needed to wind up, right? I mean, after being the kind of weird kid, the weird artsy kid who was, you know, not boyish enough and all this stuff, to wind up on a campus that was all artsy freaks, then suddenly I could be like a popular kid. Holy shit. So I was, you know, I became kind of obsessed with being popular, which is funny. I remember first encountering gay men. My RA was gay, and he was there with his boyfriend. And I remember seeing them kiss and kind of lie in bed together, or kind of, you know, be affectionate with each other. And it was shocking, like in a really visceral level. Like I just felt it, like this sense of shock. And even though intellectually I knew that that was fine, and, you know, I'd seen women being affectionate in intimate bonds before, but I hadn't seen it with men. And I remember to this day, like, how I was surprised at how shocking it felt, actually, when I finally got to see it in person. In my first week there, everybody's running around and, you know, partying and getting drunk for the first time or whatever it is without their parents around. And there's one woman who invited me up to her room, and I was sitting on her bed, and I was like, I know what she wants. She wants to hook up. And I'm feeling it's awkward. I don't feel right. And so I left, and then a boy did the same thing, and I jumped on it. You know, looking back, I realized that my set of decisions were kind of poor. That I remember my first sexual experiences were to a soundtrack of Bette Midler's Broadway tunes, which I still am quite ashamed of. But, you know, he was a theater ballet queen, and he was really into Bette Midler. But he was a closet case. So I wasn't supposed to be able to tell anybody, because nobody would figure out that this ballet dancer, major, Broadway-loving Bette Midler queen was gay, right? So I had to, even though I was completely out at this point, I came out really quickly. As soon as I figured out what I was about, I needed to come out immediately. Like, I'm one of these people who, I've never been good at the closet. I'm disorganized. I don't know, can't remember who knows what, and I just try to think of myself as a really honest person. I don't want to, I just need to be out in the world and kind of with my truth. And the idea of the closet was never even a possible question for me. So it was interesting that my first boyfriend, I had to kind of maintain the closet for him for, you know, the first 6 months or whatever it was.
Did he eventually come around?
I mean, you know, again, he was, you know, an 18-year-old ballet dancer. I mean, nobody was surprised. Oh. Mark's gay? Oh, my God. And then he transferred, which is great, because then he could move on. And I was able to start, you know, realizing I don't just have to, like, leap on every penis that presents itself to me. I can actually, like, have, you know, some more options.
I'm Paul. I am currently 61. I graduated high school in 1975. I grew up in the suburbs south of Chicago, specifically Olympia Fields and Park Forest. So I've always been an actor and a performer ever since I was a little kid. Just before my 15th birthday, I auditioned for a community theater production of The Boys in the Band. Okay. And it's a show about, I think it's nine guys, a cast of nine or seven, at a gay party in the village. It's a birthday party. And it is just this big, very catty affair. And how one straight guy, who's a friend of the birthday boy, comes in. And just all this drama ensues. It's just at a party.
Did your parents know the content of the play?
Yes. I'd always been precocious. But, you know, this is the late 60s, early 70s. There was a lot going on in American culture. My sister was going to Kent State University. My brother had his own drama going on. We were all using drugs. I started smoking pot when I was 9. I dropped acid when I was 11. This was a group of kids that were really diving headlong into the counterculture. I think, bottom line, my mom wasn't really afraid of sex. I think that might have been it. I think that's something I definitely picked up. Mostly my approach to sex over the years has been, let's check it out. Let's see what's going on. Let's see what this has to offer. And following my desire. I've never really been afraid of sex. Just of telling my dad. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I get the part in this show, and I lied about my age, and which was easy. I mean, I just pulled up my old yearbook photo from when I was 16, and I had a full beard. I looked grown up. So I auditioned for this show. I got the part of Emery, who was the screaming queen. And when I turned 15, they found out how old I was. And apparently, I heard there was a great deal of concern between the director and somebody else on the staff about they were going to get in a lot of trouble for having this young kid in this show. And I'm glad they let me do it. I got really good reviews. So I played Emery, and then there was another character named Larry. And the guy playing Larry and I just had a lot of attraction to each other. I was, of course, illegal, but I was really into him, and he was clearly into me. I don't, in retrospect, know how that was okay, but it was, I guess. For him, for me, it was fine. But he actually had a sleepover at my house, and he was 19 or 20, so I'm 15. 19-year-old guy is sleeping over at our house. I don't know what my parents were thinking. Actually, I think it was just my mom at that point. She was probably strung out. I know that there were a few years when she was drinking a lot, so that may have been my window of opportunity. And he and I actually got to touch each other, and I had my first experience of being sexual with another man. And it was amazing. And I remember his dick was huge. I had no idea what to do with it. I experimented. There was no anal play whatsoever. But there was a lot of sensual touch that led up to some oral play. It was great. And I was really into him. I don't remember a breakup. I don't remember that we were ever officially boyfriends. It's just there was this time that I was really into this guy, and then I wasn't. Sometime when I was a freshman in high school, I got interested in ballet. So somebody told me that this girl, Mary, was way into ballet. She was a really good dancer. And I met her, and we took some ballet classes together, and we started to hang out together. At that point, she was a freshman. I was a sophomore then. And she was an amazing dancer and really super whip smart and incredibly funny and so sexy and just very sexual. And she and I just hit it off big time as friends. And we started hanging out all through my sophomore year. And then sometime in the summer after my sophomore year, we started playing around sexually. And then we continued to be sexual together. A lot of it was very playful. I learned about eating pussy, learned about having my dick sucked, all from Mary. And there was always just a sense of lightness and humor and fun. We also smoked a lot of pot together. She was the first woman I had sex with, the first vagina I've had a penis in. And she knew me better than I know myself. And we persistently had sex play. And I got a sense of sex as play from Mary because she had such a playful attitude about it. There was also no agreement of monogamy between us. So I knew she was fucking other guys. And I was completely okay with that, although I was her official boyfriend. And that went on through my junior year and into my senior year. And in my senior year, she started to be a little more interested in dating other guys, but we never stopped being friends. And then for senior prom, she went with a different guy. And I went with my best friend, Chris, a guy. He's straight. We played guitars together. And we just thought it would be fun to go to prom together as guys. I'm sure I had some ulterior wanting to make a statement about being gay, but I had not made that statement to myself yet. And then when I was in that first freshman year in college, she came up to stay with me in the dorms. And this was like right after I'd moved in. And she came up and I said, "Mary, I'm gay." And she said, "Oh, Paul, I'm so happy for you. I'm so glad you figured it out. Finally, I've got to get laid." And she went, and she went out onto the floor of my dorm and found a guy to fuck. And he was the RA. He was the resident advisor. And I was completely okay with them fucking because I had my own stuff to do now. Her sexual sensibility was a lot like a gay man in that it was very casual. It didn't rely on the structures of a relationship so much as being horny and just that it was okay to be horny and to act on that. And I'm grateful to her for that. Having sex with Mary made it very clear to me that I'm about as 100% gay as I can imagine, but I have no problem with women or women's sexuality.
Thanks for listening to Fruit Bowl. Excerpts featured here are selected from each person's full-length episode from previous seasons of the podcast and have been re-edited in support of the episode's theme. Want to know more about this episode's featured interviewees? You can find links to each person's full-length interview in the show notes of this episode. Fruit Bowl is produced independently without any corporate media infrastructure or full-time staff. Help support our efforts to collect, archive, and share personal stories about queer coming of age by making a small monthly donation through Fruit Bowl's Patreon membership. Patrons get early access to episodes, behind-the-scenes updates, and exclusive video extras that are not available to the general public. Or promote your business by sponsoring an episode of Fruit Bowl or dedicate an episode to a loved one. Sponsorships and dedications are 100% tax deductible through Fruit Bowl's fiscal partnership with Seattle's Northwest Film Forum. Fruit Bowl receives no direct funding from Northwest Film Forum, only the use of their nonprofit status to receive tax deductible donations. Learn more at fruitbowlpodcast.com/donate or write Dave at fruitbowlpodcast.com for more information. Social media platforms often censor mentions or depictions of queer sexuality. Accounts are suspended or banned outright without notice or due process. As a result, promoting Fruit Bowl is an uphill battle, so we rely on you to help spread the word. Tell your friends about Fruit Bowl, rate, and write a review on your favorite podcast platform. You can find links to all our social media at fruitbowlpodcast.com. Fruit Bowl is created, produced, and edited by Dave Quantic. That's me. This has been a production of Cubed Media. All rights reserved. Thanks for listening.